What we're going to talk about this time is built on a test that people took last time. So there are a few around. People may be willing to at least show them to you. Unfortunately, or fortunately, the title of the test is the Dysfunctional Attitude Scale. Yeah, so you're a little on edge when you start. But the theory behind this self test is that there are these basic categories around which we're more likely to be vulnerable in terms of our self-esteem. That is, if you just look at self-esteem as a whole, it's real helpful to know in what particular areas is my self-esteem most likely to be affected. And, you know, for me, that's the purpose of using this test. So we can talk briefly about these categories, and I think if we just mention them, some of you will be able to say, oh yeah, I think this is pretty important to me, and I think something else is not important. Maybe what we could do, if we could have people who were here last time, just somebody describe any one of these. Can somebody describe approval? What's the issue around approval and self-esteem? About two sentences on each of these. Anyone do that? Okay.
Approval is...
Okay. And that's why it affects self-esteem. Okay? What's love? What was the reference to Love Junkies all about?
Same thing as twice.
Okay. So, and the problem love, then would be if the person...
The Love Junkie part was the person that goes around looking for all the time.
Right. That if somebody stops loving you, then instead of just being disappointed or angry or all of the other things that you could feel, the problem is, that in terms of self-esteem, that you lose a sense of yourself. Okay? That pretty clear? We're going to gallop through these for those of you who weren't here. How about achievement? What's the issue about achievement and self-esteem?
That your worth is valued on it yourself and your worth.
Okay. Any question about that? Does that make sense? Perfectionism. Okay. It primarily has to do with your being perfect.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is about your own actions, mostly. Entitlement may be the passive side of that. What's the one about entitlement that has to do, and how does that relate to self-esteem?
That meant that you judged that you were entitled to something because you did good works.
Mm-hmm.
Or did not do good works, so you didn't bother
right.
particularly.
Well, I mean, I'm the mother here.
Self-esteem is based on whether or not you're...
People will give things to you just because they are your due.
Yeah.
It's like, I work hard. Yeah. People should appreciate my hard work.
They owe me.
Not only that, they should give me a birthday present.
Right. Mm-hmm.
My mother's present. And clean their room.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm entitled to that because I'm the mom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Omnipotence. What's omnipotence and how's that related to self-esteem? Okay, and well, what's the extension of that? Yeah. Yeah, omnipotence, remember, had mostly to do with being responsible for other people's feelings. It may also have a feeling of responsibility for other people's actions, but primarily it's around the issue of that if someone else feels bad, it's your fault. If someone else doesn't feel good, it's your fault. That you, I think you're correct about the part about you're the center of the universe, because it does mean that you have control over all of these people and all of these things around you. Okay, and autonomy, what's the issue of autonomy with regard to self-esteem? Yeah, and for many people, it's like if we look at this, I talked to some people after the group last time, and in some ways, we have many, many, many messages sort of on the opposite side. It's like on the downside of all these. Many of us have messages, for example, that we are responsible for other people's feelings. You know, that it is our job to see that people feel good about themselves. Or that people feel successful, or that our children feel successful, that our friends feel successful. Many of us are told from a very early age that it is important that other people approve of what we do. That is how, in fact, we will know if we've done well, if many people approve. So it's real tricky, I think, sometimes, because some of these are just as basic kinds of understandings as we've ever been given, and what the information about the self-concept and self-esteem says is that those are distortions. That in fact, as we are learning as young people, as children, to gather our own self-esteem, we are in fact dependent on the approval of others. But at some point, if our self has been developed well, we will be able to not be dependent on all of these reflections and all of these other pieces of our world to measure our self-worth. It doesn't mean that we won't experience anger or disappointment or all of those feelings when things don't go well, but it does mean that we don't lose our sense of ourself. We don't, every time there's a problem, we don't assume that we caused it. Is there a question or comment or reflection from somebody who was here last time, particularly to get the other people on board? Okay, I just want to ask you for a minute. Now, some of you who took the test will have some more or less objective data. It's subjective data because it's yours in front of you. But even for people who were not here, if you could just talk with someone near you for a couple minutes, and maybe particularly if those of you who were not here are still trying to make sense of this, ask some questions like, what did this mean? Some of you who have some copies of the test can let people read some of those definitions at the end. What I'd like each person in the room to do is, given some limited understanding of these categories, try to identify in which area do you think you're the most likely to be vulnerable. Usually what happens is people have one or two or three areas where they're more vulnerable in terms of self-esteem than others. Yeah, sometimes when the issue is approval, you want to get yourself out of that particular relationship. It's like there, part of this is, and we're going to go through these one at a time. Anybody else on an approval thing want to be sure to get their story out or a question?
Just like speaking up in groups here, if you don't want to.
Mm-hmm. Many people feel a lot of anxiety before they speak out. It's like it's real hard for them to do that. For the sense, it's like some of it is not having much practice speaking in groups. But if approval is an issue, then it's like then you do look around, not always for your mother, but to see if anybody's nodding. And is anybody else resonating to this? And there are a lot of people who sit in these groups and are pretty stony-faced. you can't work on approval very well here.
I always thought it was a lot easier to speak out in a group where you didn't know anybody and probably would never see anybody of these people again.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is. But not if approval's your thing. So if approval's your thing, you even want strangers to like what you say. Mm. Unimportant people.
Did you like what I said? Well, I just got my approval, so that's
okay. I think you do teach eighth grade though, don't you?
Not anymore.
Oh, I know. Okay. We're going to talk about each of these on the way down. It's like part of what's important, and we talked at the end of the last session, particularly around issues of 4th, 5th, 6th junior high school age kids and the kind of things that they do for approval. When we talk about adult issues with self-esteem, we don't want to sort of flop that same kind of mindset on our children. Because, in fact, if you at your age don't find approval an area around which you're vulnerable, what it means is that when you needed to get approval for what you were doing, you got it. And you got enough so that you now have a sense that, it doesn't matter if some people like what I do and some people don't like what I do. It's still okay. But there are years during which it's very important for us to have gotten approval. And if approval is still an area that's real vulnerable for you, we talked a couple days ago about the repair process in terms of self-esteem. Remember, we talked about the nurturing source. That it may be that for a while, you'll need to identify someone that you can go to and sort of check in and say, well, now here's what I'm thinking of doing, or here's an idea I have. And you will, in fact, be listening for approval. But you'll be doing it at a more conscious level than the kind of unconscious way we usually do it if this is a problem for us with self-esteem. You may, in fact, need to reparent yourself around the issue of approval. And it's ironic. It's like people go, okay, now that I know I need approval, I'm not going to need it anymore. Boy, I wish it were that simple. You can't name the enemy and then move away from it. Once you've named the issue, and that's why I really encourage you to find the one or two or three that are problems. Give yourself the gift of that for a while. Because that's what will help you. It's like at some point, because when you know what you're doing, you'll say, okay, good Lord, that's enough. All right, that's enough. I think I can manage this pretty well. And think about giving yourself the gift of something that's important to you, finding a way to deal with that. So if you know that you need approval, go ahead and find somebody who really values you and check out your thinking, check out your work, check out things. But at some point, that person, it isn't that person's job always to nod. It's that person's job to give you a realistic assessment of how you're doing. And for you then to begin to get a realistic assessment of how you're doing. And then you're not so dependent on approval. I mean, that doesn't become such a stone. Does that make sense, folks? Okay. And we talked about kids and peer approval. You know, there are stages at which they really do need approval from their peer group. And that approval is more important for their self-development at that time than parental approval. And you want to be real conscious of that. You may, in fact, want to have some influence over what kind of approval they go to get from a peer group. But, many people have some very strong values about not spending bundles of money on clothes and stuff. And the culture, particularly, upper elementary, junior high, those kids really are judged by their peers on what they look like. So you may not want to spend, $40 on five pair of jeans, but you might want to spend $40 on two pair of jeans. You might want your kid to understand, to talk that through openly. That's about that issue of approval. But it's very important. And just because you love them, it isn't enough. It's not going to be enough. So some of those issues are real important.
Sharon, would it be kids who are developing weaknesses in approval that would tend to be more victims of peer pressure into worse things like getting into drugs and alcohol and things like that? Would it be because that approval stage wasn't met earlier by their parents or was circumvented by their parents when it should have been important to their friends, something relatively harmless like clothes?
Yeah, that's possible, that the more needy they are for approval, that the more they will look for it in peer groups. But even healthy kids will look for it in peer groups. They need to know not only do their parents love them, but can they make it in a world of equals? So they'll be somewhat vulnerable about that anyway. Okay. Question or comment or something about the approval part? Okay, how about love? How many people sort of absence of a love person just real hard? You just sort of lose yourself. Did we have a couple hands or did you change your mind? Okay. Can you talk about that? Can we talk about that in terms of self-esteem?
Yeah.
Can you? Somebody?
I read the definition again, and I still come back to the thing that the definition says that you don't need love to have a good self-esteem, and I can't agree with that definition. I had a fairly, a high or low. Mathematically, it's a high negative number. Which means it was a -2 or -3. I can't remember.
Okay.
As opposed to a -9, which is a low one.
Mm-hmm.
Again, mathematically. But I don't think people can function without love somewhere.
Okay.
Now, whether it's a one person or from several or something, but I couldn't buy into the definition that the woman wrote.
Okay.
So I kind of discarded that thought from my test.
Okay. I think that's what we're talking about when we say that some of these issues are so, I mean, they're just so basic that it's like, well, what do you mean? I mean, what do you mean you could actually be happy without someone who loves you? And again, it's a little like the approval issue. It doesn't mean, I mean, we do know that developmentally that people have to have experienced love at some time, that youngsters have to have love or they don't thrive, they really give up and die. I think what it means in this is that at any given moment, if there's no, sort of one person in the world who has chosen you as the beloved one, is in fact yourself diminished by that? Well, I think we have lots of messages in the culture that say, yep, you're not quite as worthy or worthwhile as you are if someone loves you. But that's that's very difficult in terms of self-esteem. If you've got that one, I hope you got this one too. The omnipotent thing, because you know, we can't control whether someone loves us. It's, you know, I mean, the world is too chaotic.
The questions on the test for those two were very similar, too.
Okay, interesting.
Love is one of the things that I scored lowest on, and I also did not necessarily agree with the definition, but I had recognized in myself for a long time that if something were to happen to my wife, not that I'm planning to get rid of her, I would probably remarry relatively quickly. I probably wouldn't jump into a bad marriage on rebound, but I don't like to be alone, and I recognize that myself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I feel like the question's really got the issue of self-esteem in the love area.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I kind of agree with what the gentleman said, that it's so basic. I don't know how we can exist without it, and it's very biblical.
What are the questions about love in the test? Did somebody read some of those? It's 6 through 11, or 6, is that right?
6 through 10.
6 through 10.
I cannot find happiness without being loved by another person.
Speak it real loud, Gay.
Okay. I cannot find happiness without being loved by another person. If others dislike you, you are bound to be less happy. If people whom I care about reject me, it means there's something wrong with me. If a person I love does not love me, it means I am unlovable. Being isolated from others is bound to lead to unhappiness. Is it 6?
Yeah, I think that's it.
6 or 10.
It had a lot to do with happiness in several of those questions, which is kind of something that comes and goes. You know, you might feel unhappy one day, you might feel. Mm-hmm. I didn't really feel like they were giving a self-esteem in that question.
Mm-hmm. Anybody who, now having heard that, want to comment one way or the other? Yeah, LaVon?
I have this problem. Having lost my husband last year, I had a real battle with maintaining my self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
We have been very close. I also retired from my job last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have the love of my coworkers. I didn't have the love of my husband. I had the love of my children. But there was that void, and I had a real battle with my self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in my life, you know, I have regained some, and I will regain more.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it depends upon where you are in your stage of life.
But I think that's a good description. It's like the death of a spouse or someone moving away, the end of the relationships that you depend upon, it's like when those are gone, if, in fact, you define yourself by other people's love for you, then you're very vulnerable. Now, it doesn't mean, it's like you can lose people and still feel grief and rage and loss and all of those things. But you can feel all of those things and not feel a loss of yourself. Yeah. But I do think that's really basic. I think we have messages, I just think we have messages everywhere. It says, you're nobody till somebody loves you. Well, excuse me. You know, on my way to becoming somebody, I intend to keep at it. You know? And if we have to keep looking around for someone, I mean, I know these are real basic things. And some of these are like, you know, what's this got to do with it? What's love got to do with it? But defining ourselves, our self-concept, like who we are, that we are people of worth, by the presence of a lover from the outside, is just, I mean, that makes you, it makes yourself go away. Yourself shouldn't have to go away. But I think that is one of the tougher ones. I think it's one of the tougher ones.
Sharon, what would somebody like, say, an abused spouse fall into that? Somebody that takes abuse and keeps on coming back and takes it for 10 or 15 years, would that be under the love problem, or where would that fall? Someone that stays with an abusive spouse?
Well,
can that person have good self-esteem?
Yeah, no, they don't.
Yeah, she's wondering, it's like, which of these
those,
then
yeah,
is...
Would they be all of those?
Well, love and approval are probably two of them.
It would also be entitlement. They think they deserve that sort of treatment.
Yeah, that can be it. That they've defined it, you know, sort of askew, but that's the way they sort of hold on to it. Any other thoughts about that? Okay, how about achievement? How many achievement folks do we have in the room? Okay, and it doesn't mean you shouldn't do good work. Yeah. What's the issue around self-esteem? That we value ourselves based on the wonderfulness or whatever of our work. Yeah, so there's nothing wrong with doing good work. As long as we don't, it's like when a project fails, do you feel like a failure? No? Well, there's a lot of folks out there would like you to. Keep you working. Okay? Anybody else want to work on that? It seems to me, again, the issue, the corrective for that does have to do with separating yourself, you know, from the project. There's nothing like a good failure to get you over that one. You know, and if you think you haven't had one, you might go back and reevaluate. Like oftentimes what will happen is that people with high achievement orientation simply won't define any of their work as failure. Because it's so threatening to yourself concept.
Don't you think?
Yeah, you never see on the desk of somebody with that one, it's like, you know, anything worth doing is also worth doing poorly. Yeah. That. Yeah, Helen.
Let's go with people that get fired with your jobs, or people that don't make good grades, don't get into college that they want.
You mean if they just commit suicide? Yeah, the committing suicide is a good clue. that was a big one. And sometimes what will happen is that, you know, it's like when they don't. I mean, because people do have failures and don't commit suicide, that if in fact, and when we again talking about the repair process, if they get back and talk to someone who helps them understand why that project didn't go well, or why in fact they didn't get into the college they wanted to, or helps them understand other kinds of causes for that, then they're not so vulnerable around the achievement goal again. Question here?
I think what she was trying to identify is, I know a person who is very capable, but once he gets going in a job and starts moving up the ladder, he like purposely messes up so he gets fired or doesn't keep getting moved up because he's afraid of doing too well. And I think that's a dysfunction in achievement.
He's afraid of doing too well, or he's afraid he's going to be at a position where he can't do well.
I'm not sure, but you know, he'll deliberately do things like miss work or not perform the way I know he can, as I've seen him. Mm-hmm. But you know, he's done this in job after job after job, and he doesn't stay in one place too long because of that automatic point that he gets to where he just starts messing up on purpose.
And you think that's and that person's self concept is real closely tied to achievement? Is that
a dysfunction in achievement?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's possible. See, it's even possible to have achievement be one, except that I don't think it's quite in that same category. But you may have a certain sense of a certain level of achievement that you're going to get to, and that's it. And then you may do the kind of sabotage you talked about. Yeah. So it's possible that you haven't necessarily linked achievement with perfectionism. But that your self-concept is tied to being okay or sort of good, and attempts to move you out of that are threatening to that self-concept too. So I hadn't thought of it that way. Okay. Any other questions or comments about the achievement orientation?
Well, I did on the achievement and the next one, perfectionism, and it's interesting. I come from a family with a lot of brothers and sisters and two highly motivated, highly educated parents. And all of us, got a lot of approval and a lot of love. So those are really issues for me. But there's also a lot of expectation in terms of achieve. And I was telling Sue here that this came through one time, the comment that my mother, after I finished seminary, she hadn't been all that excited about me going to seminary. She wanted me to be a doctor or a geologist or something. And a few days after I finished 3 grinding years in seminary, she said, "Now, Dan, you will want to go to graduate school someday, won't you?" Great. What have I just been doing the last 3 years? But it's those little subtle announcements all 6 of those kids have talked about that. How we just always feel like we've got to be achieving all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like you just never can lighten up or let up much.
So I had to do a lot of, you know, instead of spending 2 weeks of my vacation teaching a whole village, I was hard to imagine only doing 1 week teaching, the other week just back
teaching. Yeah.
Somehow got to be productive during that time.
Okay. How about perfectionism? How many people have perfectionism? No perfectionists. Well, what a nice surprise. Yeah. Same one. Are you hiding your face here because
well,
it's your...
I didn't take the test, but...
But I have a feeling that... I almost even hate to ask, what's the problem with perfectionism?
Fear of failure. Two questions.
Uh-huh.
Unable to face failure.
Mm-hmm.
Doing things over and over until they're right.
Yeah, that's because you won't ever say I'm done, right?
Or never even starting anything because you're afraid you forget to.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question then first, I can get Stan. And if your parents gave you the approval and love that you needed, where is the line as a parent between helping your child have a healthy self-esteem, but pushing them so that they can use the gifts and talents that they have without making them feel that they can never sit down and relax.
You know, I love you dearly, but why aren't you going to name mine?
Why do you use the word push?
Well,
do parents really push?
Some do.
Do they want, some do, but maybe that is not the way to go at it. Perhaps there's another way to encourage children to do better and to make the environment for doing better available to them. I don't like the word push. We were not pushed.
And is perfectionism not a problem for you? So maybe it's something in the intentionality of that word even that you're trying to convey.
We set certain standards for ourselves. We try to maintain those standards.
But are they perfect, those standards?
No.
Oh, okay. That would be a difference.
Because I don't know you can ever achieve perfection personally. That's how I feel. Mm-hmm. Perfection as a standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like if you don't have the mindset that they will be perfect. It's like if you don't have a mindset that says, you know, you're always learning, you know, you've always got to be doing something useful. We talked again a couple days ago about the two issues around self-esteem are being and doing. And some people get sort of grace-filled messages about being, but very, American work ethic messages about doing. And it sounds like that's what you described, Dan, that, you know, your experiences, my parents really loved me and loved my siblings, but... Boy, we knew that we had to sort of keep at it. So, and the doing thing, I think, is usually where perfectionists feel it. You know, they usually feel it in terms of, and the achievement folks, too, in terms of productivity. Okay, I want to move through these kind of quickly because I have another grid I'd like you to use. Entitlement, we got any entitlement folks here? Just furious because they didn't get their due? They didn't get what, you know, life was supposed to be given them? You're pointing. Awe to a person who's sitting on the floor.
I should be on the phone.
That's true because you had to go away and be the nurse right in the middle of the session.
That's right.
Really, how rude.
I know. We shouldn't have done that.
Okay, rude.
But I was surprised at my score and entitlement. I was a little in awe of that.
A negative there.
Yeah.
Can you talk at all about, I mean, what do you think that mindset is about entitlement?
Maybe stand up.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
You want to see.
The one of the people on the throne would like to stand up.
Well, let's see, I should have been very prepared because I need to be perfect when I talk.
Feel free to read the question. Read some of the questions because some people don't have tests. So that might trigger your memory.
Yes.
And it's, anybody have any idea which ones?
21 to 25.
Putting other people's needs before my own mission helped me when I need something.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was fair. I didn't know that was
I don't think that was sick. That's right. Seems pretty reasonable to me. No, that's right. I told you, that title's going to put you on edge.
And then 25 is related to that, too. If I do nice things for someone, I can anticipate that they will respect me and treat me just as well as I treat them.
Mm-hmm. It's clear you're not a teacher.
Yeah. Do those sound at all familiar to folks? That used to be a real entitlement. Used to be mine. I mean, one of mine. I haven't had all of them.
This is just one of many, though.
Yeah, yeah. It was one of many of mine too. I mean, I did. It's sort of like it's like for what purpose are we good? So people will be good back to us. It's like, isn't there some reciprocity here? No, there's people out there going, no, not unless you're perfect, not unless you achieve, not unless you're proved up. It's like, and part of it, I think, is that, and I talked about this today, I think it's a very passive kind of a stance. People who don't get messages, I mean, I think it would be difficult to have an entitlement issue and also have self-esteem real attached to achievement or perfection. I think the achievement and perfection folks are really into doing. And they get their self-esteem needs met by doing. Some of us thought we would get them met by being. Isn't this enough? And it isn't. It wasn't. And again, when we talked about the repair process, we talked about developing activities so that you can feel some sense of success in your own life, so that you have a sense of control. The issues around autonomy and omnipotence are often vulnerable to the same people who are into the entitlement stuff. But again, I think we do have some messages, you know, in the culture and in the faith that says if you're good, good will come back to you. Are you gonna?
I was going to say a similar thing. I think the message is so strong. One of the places I think also the culture, dealing with other cultures, it's been very interesting for me in cross-cultural work because I take a group of Americans to Central America, and it's amazing how much we think just by being Americans we're entitled to a whole bunch of things. Not by doing it, just by being Americans. And that's, I think there's some really strong messages in our society about that.
Mm-hmm. That we see in sort of in that contrast.
You can watch people's self-esteem really break down quickly. Culture.
Yeah, they're being treated rudely by all casts of thousands. Right? How about omnipotence? Any people for whom omnipotence is an issue?
That was one for me.
Can you talk about that? I mean, do you see how it's connected to self-esteem?
I'm sensitive to time, but... it was an internship situation. We were going around, just moved to a new area, and we were going around picking up furniture. The last appointment was 4 o'clock, and we were late. And the man was extremely angry. And I left that situation feeling devastated, feeling it was all our fault. Mm. The supervisor talked to me about it. He said there must be something going on in that person's life that caused that kind of anger. I found out the next day he was going in to have heart surgery.
Oh.
And that was probably really what was going on. But I felt like we caused that all.
Okay. You know? Yeah, it's nice when you have some of those examples that end up, it's like you take it on, and then pretty soon, and you get the information relatively quickly that it didn't have anything to do with you, or that you know some slight thing triggered an exaggerated kind of a response.
It ruined my evening, though.
But not your life, see?
Yeah.
The alternative was your life. See, I think many of us have messages about, you know, that what we do, and it's what we do does affect other people. But are we, in fact, the cause of that? You know, I think that is a tough one. Anybody else? Omnipotence a problem?
Would that relate mostly to people who are controllers? I'm still trying to sort that one out.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're not in your controlling position, then your self-esteem is affected.
That's right.
Yeah,
And usually it's around things that in fact you have no control over. No. Like other people's feelings. Yeah, or other people's lives.
So what's the repair process?
Okay, one is to find out like Reg did, it's like this person's response is this, and to find out that there was some other reason for that response, that you were not the cause of that response. Another thing, it seems to me like omnipotence and approval go together. If you find out that you do something and, you know, these 3 or 4 people think it was pretty good, these people think so-so, and these people think, yeah, that's really... Then what you learn is that you can do something and you'll have a variety of responses to the very same thing. Something that you thought was, you know, there pretty much would be... people would either like it or not like it. Mostly they would like it. Getting a whole variety of feedback. One way to deal with the omnipotence stuff, I think, is to ask people for feedback and to listen carefully. To begin to get a variety of responses to certain situations, you begin to see that there's lots of things that control people's responses, one of which may have been your activity. You know, and that's not the total control of that. Anybody else have a suggestion about how to deal with the omnipotence? Okay, I heard the chimes for Vespers, so I know they want us to go. Let me tell you what we're going to do tomorrow morning. The last session's is it 10:45 tomorrow morning? We're going to talk about scripting and injunctions. We're going to talk about sex role theory and behavior modeling as an influence on the one of those things that you chose, because I think that's, you know, for some of us, figuring out where this belief system came from is one way to begin to get a handle at rewriting that belief system.
She was in a test.
Yeah, and if you, those of you who have your test, bring that. If any of you want copies of this stuff, if you just leave your name and address, I'll be happy to mail you some copies. I just came not bringing as many things as we need. So that's what we're going to do tomorrow morning. That'll be the last session for this stuff on self-concept and self-esteem. I'm sensitive to not wanting our whole group to go in late to Vespers. Thank you.